Hello, Denim Heads, and welcome to your 24th Hangout with the Sons of Selvage podcast. This is a podcast where a group of friends get together to talk about denim, boots, rugged wear, and related interests. We aim for this to be a fun and inclusive podcast where you feel like you're hanging out with longtime friends, but be warned, there's a bit of banter, cutting up, and explicit language. In this episode, we'll be doing a discussion topic about how we built our denim community in London. So on that note, I'm David, and today I'm wearing a Telesun coverall jacket and black selvage, a neon green button-down from Hamilton Shirt Co., which is a very underrated shirt maker in Houston, and a pair of 316 21 BSPs, which are probably the only relaxed tapered jeans I will wear.
Hi guys, I'm Ilya. Today I'm wearing a Cole Hayes shawl knit sweater with a warehouse chambray and a pair of Black Horse Lane SE1 jeans.
Hey everyone, Lex here. I'm wearing my Hatter's Anonymous hat, which is still inside out. Thank you. A LVC 1880s pleated blouse, UAS shirt. Oh, and I'm actually wearing some fleece jogging bottoms because it's freezing cold in my house. So I'm afraid I'm not actually wearing jeans today.
Hashtag comfort.
Exactly.
Hashtag true workwear.
True workwear.
Hi guys. Yeah, it's Tom here. I'm wearing a Uniqlo t-shirt. But it is one of the really thick ones. It's decent quality. And obviously wearing my United overalls, shameless plug jeans, an Equus leather belt, which was actually gifted to me by a friend. And then my socks have zebras on. So there's that.
Awesome. So on that note, let's jump right into current interest. I guess I can kick things off. So I've had a bit more free time this year than I've had in past years, and decided to pick up an old hobby from my childhood, which is playing guitar. I always had a guitar and turntables until I moved to Europe. But what I want to talk about is this little dude here. I'm not sure if my camera will pick it up. It's called the Fender Mustang Micro. And this is like the most amazing piece of technology that exists now that didn't exist back in the day. It's basically like a little teeny tiny headphone amplifier. So you like plug it into your guitar, you plug your headphones into it, or you can like plug it into your computer. And you basically have like a digital guitar amp that like I can jam out and make a ton of loud noise, and only I hear it. My neighbors on both sides don't hear it. And it's got like a whole bunch of different amplifier settings, a whole bunch of different equalizer settings per amplifier, a bunch of effects pedals built in, and you can like modify stuff. So it's like across like 12 different amps and 12 different effects, you can do insane amounts of stuff, you know, like very reverby stuff, very echoey stuff, grungy stuff, all of it. And it's like really blown my mind that something so little and so obvious exists now, and it didn't before. And I'm just like absolutely in love with this thing. It's so cool.
Yeah, I had Vox's version of that, which is kind of, you know, dialed in for that Vox AC30 tone. So that's a nice little one, but doesn't have like all of the app connectivity that Fender one has. So I might have to give that one a little look up and have a look.
And to clarify, it doesn't actually have like any app features. It's just they've encoded in the heart, you know, the digital hardware, different amp profiles and different effects profiles and a couple like tweaks. And there's like a big giant volume knob so you can crank it up. But I bought an effects pedal recently. I was like, I wonder if I can like plug it into my effects pedal and then plug it into my headphones. So you can even do like chaining of effects pedals to the amp, to your headphones, and even doing more weird craziness. It's a lot of fun.
When did you learn to play guitar, David?
Oh man, I did lessons like probably since about age 12, I think. And I always had a guitar until basically when I moved to Europe with my job, like an electric and acoustic. And I've really gotten into more rock music over the years, like shoegaze and sludge gaze and a lot of the, like, kind of wall of sound, really distorted, really noisy stuff, noise, rock, etc. And I decided that I wanted to actually try and make some. So I got the guitar off of Facebook Marketplace, and I got the little mini amp. And then also one thing that's kind of cool is I've been using the Fender Play app to, like, learn some of the theory I never learned. Because I didn't do very good with learning theory as a kid. I just wanted to, like, learn particular tracks. So I've been kind of doing the theory thing and trying to get that down. That's a pretty amazing app as well.
The question that every English person would want to know, though, is, do you know how to play Wonderwall?
I did as a kid. I don't remember that one, though. my practice regimen usually is, like, post-punk songs. So I play a lot of, like, Interpol songs, for example, which are my favorite back in college.
Yeah, what guitars have we got at the moment?
Just one. I got a Kramer, which is owned by Gibson now, a Kramer Pacer, which is technically like an 80s hair metal guitar. But it's kind of funny because I, when I was at home for Christmas, I was like, man, I want to get a guitar again. So I was playing my dad's. And I opened Facebook Marketplace, which I often do for random stuff like Toy Soldiers. And there was like the perfect guitar sitting for me in my feed. And the dude who was selling it lives like 10, 15 minutes away from me, and the price was good and everything. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess I figured out what guitar I'm getting. I didn't really put much thought into it because I figure I'm not good enough to, like, really be particular and say, like, I need a 60s jazz master to sound like My Bloody Valentine. So, yeah.
And the perfect guitar was, of course, neon green.
it is neon lime, which is kind of why why it spoke to me was, let's see if I can get a picture instead of having to unpack it.
It didn't matter how it sounded, but it had to be the right color.
Well, it's moreover that, like, at my skill level, I wouldn't be able to really detect the difference anyways, and like the pickups and the nuance. And like, this style of guitar is a very general purpose one, and it's really good for kind of doing like metal stuff, which basically means that it's really skinny and it's easy for you to move your hands around, which for me, I was like, well, as a beginner, that would probably actually be preferable to be able to more easily move around and play it. Because I would still call myself a beginner, even though I played it a lot as a kid. So yeah, at some point, I might need something cooler or more specific, which would probably be a Jazzmaster. But in the meantime, I mean, it's under 200 pounds. So it's like, that's good enough for my needs.
And did you go onto Facebook Marketplace and search for neon green electric guitar? Or did you search for guitar and a neon green one happened to come up?
That's the crazy shit that I can't quite figure out. Like, I never have searched Facebook for anything neon. Usually I've either searched for like guitar, Filson bag, Warhammer soldiers, whatever type of soldiers, or like Viberg, you know, like basically it's like rugged clothing or like geek stuff. And just somehow it just happened to be the first one in my feed. Is literally like the top corner. I'm like, oh, that's probably the guitar I need to get.
The algorithm got you, David.
Yeah, it's probably.
It was probably listening to your conversations that you wanted to play guitar.
On my neon phone.
On a neon phone. Yeah, it got you.
Yeah. It's really funny because over time, like as my tastes have changed, my wardrobe now is literally just three colors. There's basically blue clothing, black clothing, and lime green clothing. Like all other colors have somehow kind of trickled away from and disappeared out of my wardrobe.
Interesting, because a lot of the guys kind of in this scene gravitate towards olive drab as the third color. And you just turned it up a notch and ended up in with neon.
Yeah, well, different current interests. I won't go into it, but there's something around me building a brand or designing some stuff at some point, and neon will factor into the designs, maybe something subtle like thread or the logo, but it's definitely part of my identity.
Interesting. I look forward to seeing what you cook up.
Probably have to phone Lex when I get there.
Well, he's happy to help.
Cool, that's probably it for me. How about you, Ilya?
We're talking about current interests. I am currently listening to Questlove's latest book, which is about creativity, and his kind of his journey to discover why creativity is important, and kind of trying to get the fundamentals of it. Let me just look up the full title. So it's called The Creative Quest by Questlove of the Roots. So I just thought I always enjoy listening to Questlove on his podcasts and interviews. So I thought it'd just be an interesting listen to kind of get into his thoughts. And he does a good job of breaking down different, I guess, parts of creativity and some of the stages and some of the, I guess, tips and tricks. And also sometimes, like, if you get writer's block or painter's block, whatever you would call it, some strategies around how to deal with those. And also what creativity is, and is everyone creative, or is it a specific group of people? So it's quite interesting to listen to him describe that and go into it and use his real world knowledge and experiences to kind of back up what he's saying, because he's kind of a multidisciplinarian with his abilities from being a musician, being a writer, being a musical director, also being interested in food, which I recently found out about. He's hosted multiple events around that and had a restaurant himself. So yeah, it's quite an interesting thing to listen to, especially when I'm either commuting or just walking about town. Yeah, it's been really, really enjoyable.
If he had a pop-up restaurant, would he call it Guest Love?
Good one.
Some good creativity from you there, David.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously,
well, I'll just wait till a little bit more of this and things fall apart. The Roots album. But
you're on fire today, David.
Oh, yeah. This is what happens when we're not recording at 9 in the morning.
Yeah, so that's my interest for this episode.
Quick question. Does he go into like the creative process as it pertained to their different records or like different stages of the Roots sort of career, or is it more abstracted from that?
He does break down a few bits. He tries to gather evidence from different fields more like, more so than just concentrating on how he records. But yes, he does delve into how he did some of the recordings and some of the methods of using, you know, recording drums, for example, or things like that. But more in a general kind of way, I guess, than specifically saying, you know, we did this or we did that. He does draw upon those experiences, but it's not just like, you know, when for this album we did this. More anecdotal, I think, is the best way to describe it. So, yeah.
Yeah, sounds cool. I'd love to see like a book done on that, but about different rappers and different like interesting personalities within hip hop, right? Because like he could almost do something like that where like there's a whole chapter about like, I don't know, MF Doom's creative process, or like, you know, Buck 65, or who else would be interesting? I don't know, like Cool Keith, and just sort of like really interesting personas in hip hop that have very unique ways of or like Andre 3000. Yeah, he'd be a cool one. I'd love to see something like that, but I don't know if he has any interest in writing such a book.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that's probably sounds like probably would work really well as a podcast as well, which kind of with my mind going blank right now was doing
what's Open Mike Eagle?
Open Mike Eagle, the one that we both really liked with MF Doom and Prince Paul, where he kind of delved into those kind of historical records and the thoughts and the processes behind it. But yeah, it would be nice to hear Questlove's breakdown on it. He does talk about Dilla and how his approach to music really changed his kind of perception of it as well, which is quite interesting, because Questlove is someone who grew up trying to be a very perfect drummer, and being on point, on time, or you know, all the time. And when he first heard Dilla, and Dilla was kind of playing around with time, you know, the rhythms of time and being offbeat, and you know, recording his drums kind of unquantitized, that really inspired Questlove to be a little bit freer with his music.
Yeah, it's slightly tangential, but I've been watching a YouTube series. The channel's called Trash Theory. I don't think they've done any hip hop episodes, but I need to go back and check. But they've got this really cool podcast where it's like, a YouTube series where it's like the history of a particular genre. So it's like, how did shoegaze become shoegaze? Or like, how did grunge become grunge? How did synth pop become synth pop? And they go back from like 50s or 60s all the way to like when these genres were famous and kind of like what steps led to them evolving.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw it, but man, it'd be so cool if they did some hip hop ones.
That sounds interesting. Yeah, it's always interesting to delve back into the influences of certain genres and how they came about. Mm. What about you, Tom?
Not a vast amount going on. Just starting my new job and getting settled on that. We have been watching The Last of Us, which episode 3, I think, is single-handedly the saddest episode of any program out there ever. It is an absolute tearjerker. We were just like a pure class piece of TV. So if you haven't watched The Last of Us, do watch it, because it's cracking.
I have to admit something. I've played both games and you know, spent a lot of hours playing it and started to watch it, and the first episode, I think it took me like 3 attempts to watch it because I just kept falling asleep.
Oh.
and I don't know whether this is just you know, certain things make you go to sleep, and I am enjoying it, and but maybe it's just because I've like, I know the story so well.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of just like switching off. I've made it through the first episode finally. I'll be giving the second episode a go very soon.
The third episode, because I've spoken to someone who's also played, you know, Last of Us 1 and 2, knows pretty much every scene word for word, which is quite sad for a game. And he said, you know, a lot of the scenes, you know, they, you know, recreate the framework of the game, you know, because it was directed by the guy who done that Chernobyl program, and he was really good in that program for like recreating the nuclear power plant, like exactly how it was, to all the photos, all the actors look exactly, you know, as close to, you know, those historic figures as possible. So the series is like shot for shot recreations of the game, but they do change up the story a little bit. So in the third episode, I won't say which character it is, but there's a certain character arc in that episode, yeah, that's a bit different to the game, to give a little bit of something new to people who played the game through, probably.
I feel like, you know, when you've played a game before and you're playing it for the second time around, and all you want to do is just skip the story and just get to the action and play it yourself. I think I'm kind of in that mode watching it at the moment. So yeah, I'm like skip and because I'm not being it's not happening, I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm gonna just switch off. But no, I'm looking forward to I've heard, you know, very good things about it, so yeah,
it's a cracking bit of TV. And finally catching up on Game of Thrones House of the Dragon, which is pretty good. Matt Smith is great. He is as creepy as his character should be, so that's pretty good.
Which character is he?
He is the Targaryen's uncle, the main girl who's in it. He's her uncle, and he's a bit of a creep, and the Targaryens for their incestuous ways, should I say?
Not Dante, but something like that, right?
Yeah, they've all got
Damien Targaryen. Yeah, cool. Yeah, he's a good actor. That was cool.
Yeah, no, I love Matt Smith. So yeah, really enjoyed him in that. Or enjoying him. Still not made it all the way through, but yeah. No, and that's pretty much it from me. Yeah, absolutely.
On the Last of Us front, did any of y'all see the YouTube video I sent from the Saturday Night Live sketch? Oh man, I WhatsApped it, I think. But basically, Saturday Night Live. What's up?
I said if you can resend it again, or we can dig through it and have a look.
Yeah. So Saturday Night Live, which is a weekly live comedy sketch show in America, they had Pedro Pascal as the host this past weekend, and they did a sketch where they basically were saying like, Last of Us was such an amazing recreation of a TV show by HBO that the next one they're going to do is HBO is going to do Mario Kart, but Mario Kart in the vein of Last of Us. So like Pedro Pascal's Mario, and he's got to like transport the princess across the Mushroom Kingdom, and it's all like super gritty and dark, and it's a very, very funny sketch.
I imagine like Pedro Pascal would 100% be open to doing that for real. Because yeah, we don't Chris Pratt as Mario.
It's so funny because he's like, it's a me, Mario. And it's just the way they did it was really funny. I recommend folks watching that. It's a great 5 minutes of your life spent.
Lex, did you you haven't told us about your current interest, have you?
No, I haven't. Sorry.
I'm just mixing it up.
What was I going to mention? So since the last time I saw you guys, I have bought the latest Hella's Cafe King of Vintage book.
You saw it.
Really good book. I follow, as I'm sure everyone listening does, Moisin on Instagram, who has his like denim book club. So of course following him is very expensive for me, because every time he posts a book that I don't have, I'm like, oh, I wonder where I can get that one. So luckily I have a Amazon Japan account, so I went onto Amazon Japan and got it sent over. It wasn't too bad. It's like 40 something quid, so not too expensive. Really good book. Yeah, highly recommended to anyone listening who wants kind of a nice book with just lots of vintage pieces. Really well made, nicely printed, interesting pieces inside. Some decent information about them as well, without being too wordy for those of us who don't particularly like reading. So yeah, highly recommended.
Is there text in there in the book?
A little bit, not a lot. But there's just like a little bit of information about each piece. So it's slightly more in depth than just looking at pretty garments kind of thing. But okay. Again, it's not like maybe denim branded, you know, where there's a lot of information about the garments, yeah. Which kind of it takes a bit of time to read. But yeah, I'm really pleased. So this is volume 4. So I've not got any of the other ones who've come out. And they now sell for ridiculous prices on eBay. But yeah, I'm really happy I've got this one. So yeah, a highly recommended purchase.
I thought I heard that they are republishing the other three.
Quite possible.
I saw somebody in Japan was selling them. I don't know whether it's connected with Larry.
No idea, but hopefully if they do, it means the people trying to sell them on eBay for like 500 quid will kind of maybe try and sell it at a slightly more sensible price.
Yeah,
because some of these, I mean, God knows how much I've spent on denim books over the years.
For our listeners that don't know Heller's Cafe, what's the kind of gist of them?
To be honest, I don't know much about Hella's Cafe. It's a brand, isn't it? And it's Larry, what's his surname? Larry someone, who's got this amazing archive of vintage garments.
McLaughlin?
Yeah.
That sounds about right. Hold on. It'll say somewhere in the book. I've got it in front of me.
Yeah, so Larry is a vintage hunter and dealer who's been around for a very long time. And at some point, he and Warehouse teamed up and were releasing kind of his reproductions based on, I guess, on the pieces that he had collected over a period of time. So Hella's Cafe was the kind of a brand that he created for that project. and you still see warehouse release those pieces year to year. So yeah, you can find those bits from him, but he hasn't been doing anything new for quite a few years now. I think he maybe 2018, 2017, kind of stopped seeing new stuff being created from him as a brand. But he's still very much dealing in vintage and obviously putting books like that together. So he's quite an influential person on the scene, and a big inspiration for designers and for vintage heads.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you, Ilya. Anyone else got anything else to add?
I got a speedy one. Just to mention that I talked about it, I think, last episode, but I finished my shirt using Thread Theory's Fairfield shirt pattern. Some stuff I liked about it, some stuff I didn't like about it. So I'll probably do a 5x1 review, I think, for our YouTube channel and Instagram. So that could be interesting to see if people like us to talk about, you know, patterns and books and stuff around making. Lex, you might be the grand wizard if you want to share that knowledge.
Who cares if they like it? We'll bore them about it anyway. So how did it, how did it go? Like, how did the final pattern fit then, I guess is the first question.
Yeah, so US large fit great in the body. You know, length was good, shoulders were good, everything was pretty spot on. But I added an inch and a half to the arm length, and even still, it was probably a little bit shorter than I needed. So I would have had to like add probably 2 inches to really get a good enough arm length for me. Which seems weird because I'm not really disproportionate for that size. Also, the collar kind of almost like cuts back a bit as opposed to like pointing forward. It's almost like a square edge collar, which is a bit weird. I would have expected maybe a bit more of a vintage looking collar. But otherwise, it was fine. I mean, obviously, working with tissue patterns was really hard in general because they're so delicate. But yeah, otherwise, it's pretty good.
Oh, yeah, I've been working for like the first time ever with a bought pattern because I'm making something for my girlfriend. So I bought a pattern from Merchant and Mills. And it's a boiler suit. So she wanted it made. And I was like, it's quicker for me to just buy the pattern from them rather than spend hours cutting it from scratch. But yeah, I found it slightly weird working with a paper pattern. I end up tracing it onto paper and basically pretty much redid the whole pattern so I could have the correct seam allowances how I like it. So it ended up taking hours anyway, but it was a bit strange. The paper patterns are so horrible to work with. They're just kind of really kind of flappy and weird.
Yeah, I did try to do one of their like draw jackets, and I got as far as doing the collar, and then I just couldn't sew the collar, and now it's sitting in a bag somewhere.
But you did start with the toughest bit, sewing a collar first.
It's impossible. I just could not make everything line up. And I was just like, I bought all this like denim from Merchant and Mills as well. You know, got all the pattern, done all like the pockets. I made all the pockets really nice. I like, you know, slightly amended them to like my own shape and design. And then got to the collar end, just, yeah, fucked it.
If only you could like give a homie a 6-pack of beer and have him finish it for you or something.
Oh, is this me? Yeah.
Not me.
Next time,
yeah, David.
If you're in London at any point, you can come. The studio is almost set up, so you can come over and I'll sew the collar for you, and then you can do the rest.
Thank you.
Should have just gone for a mandarin collar, Tom?
Yeah, I was thinking about it, or doing like kind of engineer jacket, no collar style.
V, like a V.
Yeah. Would have just, you know, I would have just been faffing around for donkeys with it. And at that point, I mean, even now, I'm not that good. So I was about to say, you know, at that point when I was doing it, but yeah, I'm still not that good. So, yeah.
And 15 years ago when you were trying to do it.
It probably was about 10 years ago.
The only thing that I dislike more than Henley's is collarless button-down shirts.
Oh, really?
I hate them.
Like a buttonless shirt.
Ooh. I would never, ever wear a button-up shirt without a collar.
You mean without any collar? Like, is like a mandarin collar okay, or
not really? It's just a lesser shade of evil, but it's still it's because like I'm tall and so I've got a long neck, and if I don't have like, you know, some of my length protected, then I feel a bit funny. So yeah.
Ooh, you like to protect your neck. And what was wrong about Henleys again? Remind me. You got a fear of buttons.
No, it's just the aesthetic. I mean, basically the fact it looks like a long john. Okay. If it was like the same material and the same kind of design, but more just like a long sleeve T-shirt that happened to be like that type of material, that would be fine. But like the button down kind of flappy neck thing, I'm just not really into.
But you know, you can do the like the top button up so it doesn't flap.
Yeah, but if I always did that, then why would I want the? It's like the aesthetic of it. It's
dressy. I always consider it.
What about if the buttons went all the way down?
Then it's getting worse, maybe. I don't know.
T-shirt with buttons.
Actually, I know why I don't like it. Well, I don't like Henleys is because they look like you're wearing your underwear as your actual garment. That's the thing. Because if you wore like a long sleeve T-shirt, it looks like a long sleeve T-shirt. But like wearing the Henley as your actual garment, it's like I didn't put a shirt on. I'm just wearing my long johns to keep me warm as my primary garment.
Could you not say the same for just a T-shirt, a regular T-shirt?
Well, what I could say the same is like, or to support my argument, is you don't see people wearing like long john bottoms with or without buttons, to make the buttons argument there again, out in public as their primary trousers, right? Like you wear them under a pair of jeans or something when it's cold. And if someone was like just wearing like, let's call it Henley bottoms, you'd be like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, why are you wearing your underwear in public?
Yeah, but then, you know, if you look like 100 years ago, if someone saw you in a T-shirt, well, that's a Henley T-shirt or a normal T-shirt, you'd pretty much be seen as being naked. Like, it just wouldn't. You'd have about two or three layers over it.
Interesting. With the
underwear. So do you have a problem wearing it under a T-shirt? Sorry, under a shirt?
No. If I'm cold and, like, I need a layer, that's totally cool. It's just the...
You wouldn't wear it as your main layer.
Right.
That's why you don't like it.
Henley as a styled garment? I don't understand, but Henley as a functional insulation layer, cool.
I get you.
What's the difference between the two?
One you don't see, one you do.
I think at the next meet, we should all wear our Henleys to scare David.
Like, I've got a V-neck T-shirt on under my button-down, right, which is there to like capture any body odor or sweat and like keep my button-down shirt cleaner. But like, you don't know it's there, so it's kind of irrelevant. Like a Henley in the same way would be fine. Although because they button to the top, you'd probably actually see the top of the shirt under your button down. But if it's cold, fair enough.
It's just to get like cool layer look going.
It's like as a functional garment, like I'm on board, but it's like a style piece. I don't resonate with it. But I also don't really wear T-shirts much either. That same reason, like if you look at my wardrobe, it's like I've got like three or four T-shirts and then like 20 button downs.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, I'm easy. Henleys or T-shirts. I used to be really against Henleys. Like, ugh. It's like that type of person wears a Henley. But no, I love them. So.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I don't know your reference. I'm not going to corroborate it.
See my nipples through. That's what I like.
Oh, man. Almost as bad as like people who wear tank tops as their primary top in summer.
What do you mean by a tank top? Is this like is this American tank top?
Well, a shirt is another word for it. There's another term, but I don't really like to use it, which is wife beater. You know, like the kind of like shirt that's just kind of like a...
Like a vest, like a vested T-shirt.
A vest.
Yeah, I don't know what the British vest. Term for it is.
Yeah, a tank top is like a knitted woolen sleeveless jumper in the UK. So
that's kind of the same thing, actually. It's a knit garment. It is sleeveless. No, but
like a woolly garment kind of thing, not an underwear garment.
Oh, interesting. Maybe you call it an A-neck shirt?
No, a vest you're talking about.
Like this is just what came up in Google, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a vest.
That's like almost like a basketball vest.
Maybe right? A better example, right?
Yeah.
Like
that's a vest, I'd say.
Wife beater,
Oh, right. And then a waistcoat is what we would call a vest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jesus, man.
Americans just don't know.
Why can't they standardize this shit? Anyways. Any more current interest for folks? Or should we jump into the discussion?
Oh, can I really, really quickly?
Take all the time you want, man.
Can I talk about white t-shirts?
Yeah, I should preface it and say the only reason I'm trying to move the dialogue along is because you're going to get hungry, but I've got all the time in the world.
Okay. Oh, it'll be a quick one. Oh.
As long as you don't get hungry, we're fine.
I'm always hungry. So really quick. Anyway, so those who listen regularly would have heard my rant a few months ago now about white t-shirts, about trying to find a perfect white t-shirt, and I finally found it with Whitesville t-shirts, good quality, good fit, really nice. Anyway, I went and put them in the wash after I'd washed some gardening stuff, and they came out dirtier than they went in, and I've ruined all of them. So really quick on there.
Yeah.
And I just can't get it out, man. And I've tried all kinds of things. I've tried bleach, I've tried stain devils, I've tried washing at high temperature. Ruined both of them, my two nice new t-shirts, ruined.
What did you get on them?
It was just mud. I just put them in after. Yeah. I'd just been doing some gardening and they'd gone in after a load of gardening stuff. And it somehow got stuck in our crappy old washing machine.
What you need to do is you need to hit up Mike and like post them to Japan next time they do like one of their hand dyeing projects and see if he can like dye them with something cool for you and post them back.
Okay. Oh, man, that's not a bad idea. Maybe I'll dye them, see if I can get some indigo somehow.
Yeah. You have a look on Etsy. When I indigo dyed a few t-shirts, I got dyed on Etsy. You do need either an outside space or like a bucket to keep somewhere that you don't mind the stink. Apart from that, it's pretty easy to at home.
Yeah, I've got a garden, so my girlfriend would just have to deal with the smell. But yeah. Anyway, so that's a really quick one there, just to update you on my white t-shirt situation. For if you're worried about it, I'll keep you updated on
What's the plan now? Are you gonna get some more Whitesville t-shirts or?
Well, I did actually buy some. So I've also bought t-shirts from Truss, which is they're sold on
Market.
So I bought them before. So I bought a couple more of them because they're in the sale, but they've changed the quality of them and they don't quite. Browns, yeah, they don't quite fit, which is a bit annoying. So yeah, I'm probably going to order some more Whitesville at some point, but not right away because I'm skint at the moment. So yeah, anyway, we can move on, David. That's all I needed to add.
Again, we got all the time in the world. It's just if Lex gets hungry, we got to end the podcast. So
yeah, sorry, looking out for you, man. The podcast is I'm drinking. I had some snacks and I'm drinking beer, so I'm okay. Mm.
I should also plug that Jake, Almost Vintage Style, did an Instagram thread around the fact that like he loves white t-shirts, and I mentioned that I don't wear white t-shirts, and you guys are mentioning your different white t-shirt preferences. So, make sure folks jump on there and share your opinion.
Yeah, and Jake is a big proponent of Whitesville t-shirts. I think he was one of the first people who was kind of recommending them as well.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Back a couple of years ago. Yeah. So yeah.
Cool.
Tom, Ilya, anything from you guys?
Nothing else from me. I'm boring, so.
All right, cool. So maybe we'll jump over to our discussion topic. So I thought it'd be kind of interesting to talk a bit about the community we've built in London. So I know we referenced the fact we've got meetups and that we met through the meetups and have the podcast and we do the hangouts and all this kind of stuff. But I thought it'd be kind of cool to talk a bit about how we built what we built, like how we have kind of like connected with each other, how we've brought other friends into the fold, like Chris, who you met on the last episode. And yeah, maybe just kind of, it's not really a structured topic per se, but I just thought it'd be kind of cool to wax poetic a bit as podcast host about hanging out in London and sort of how this thing all kind of came together.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea for a topic, and I think it's best if you probably start talking about it, because I think it was between yourself and Kevin that this whole thing started. So yeah, what was the kind of the idea behind it?
Yeah, so I moved to the UK in 2013 from Paris, where I was like the only denim head there, but now there's more than one. I'm kidding, but it felt like that. I mean, it's literally like, it was very hard to get raw denim, and most stuff I would just order from Self Edge and get it shipped over. But anyways, so I moved to London, wanted to like connect with friends who are into this. And I created an Instagram. I think it was called London Hard Wearing. And then Kevin, you know, one of our fellow hosts, he had an Instagram, which was Worn Out London. He and I ended up meeting up, hanging out in person. And random aside, in my very first meetup, I had four people present. It was me, Kevin, some girl who was studying, or woman, sorry, studying fashion at like Central St. Martin's or something. And then Danny from Rivet and Hyde. He was like, it's our very first hangout.
Oh, wow.
Which is cool. I think I might have even met Kevin at one of the Rivet and Hyde events. That might be how he and I connected. So anyways, started posting on Meetup. No one showed up. But I remember there was a very monumental event where we were at Craft Beer Co. in Islington. And I think that's where I might have met you, Ilya, for the first time, and also Andy for the first time. Is that correct?
I can't quite place the first meetup that I attended. The one that really sticks in my mind, and I think is the first time I met Andy, was at the Black Horse Lane tour. That you...
I vaguely remember you saying at the time that was the first time you and Andy had met. You'd been swapping and going to kind of different ones. And
yeah, but there was a couple of ones before that. So yeah, I don't know if the Craft Beer one co was the first time that you and I met David.
Hmm.
Because I thought you were meeting around like Soho area at first. Is that correct?
Yeah, the first couple were like, I actually like booked them a street or two over from Rivet and Hyde. So I was like, oh, people will go to Rivet and Hyde when it closes. They'll like walk over to our meetup and keep hanging out, which didn't really happen, but that was the initial theory. So actually, I must have met you a lot earlier then, now that, if that's the case. Yeah, I know for sure. I think Lex, the first time I met you was at the one at the Black Horse Factory, right?
Yeah, that was the first one that I came to. Did you do one where you did like a film about denim at some point before that?
Yes.
We all met up at the Curzon.
Yeah,
I think
that's how I heard about you guys, because I don't know why I'd heard about this film and I googled it, and then the meetup came up, and I think that one was fully booked.
Was that Weaving in Shibuya or?
Yeah.
I think that might have been the precursor to the Black Horse Lane one. I think that happened earlier.
Mm.
So that's how I found out about it, is through that. And then I kind of, I think, joined the meetup group, and I saw the Black Horse Lane thing, which because I'd been making jeans, I'd obviously been interested in seeing the factory. So I popped along to that, and then met, don't think Tom was at that one. Were you at Black Horse Lane? No. So that's the first one that I kind of met everyone.
I think at that factory one, TJ Schneider from Shop Vancouver was chilling with us, because he had flown over for one of the denim masterclasses with Mosin and Black Horse. So we hung out with TJ. He was super interesting to hear his like snowboard career and all that kind of stuff.
Which masterclass did he do?
I think it was like round three, maybe, I'd call it. Third one. It was when I worked there. So it was a long time ago.
There was also that old dude who has a shop out in East Fade and Bois kind of way.
Ah.
What was his name? Can't remember.
It's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, man.
Not sure if I was at that one.
It'll come back to me shortly.
Yeah, you were there. You were there. He's at all the events. He was at the latest Clutch Cafe event as well.
Okay.
Can't remember his name now. He's got like a menswear shop out in kind of Epping Forest sort of way.
What, Wayne? From
Wayne.
Okay, yes, I was at that one. Wayne from Buckhurst Hill.
Wayne from Buckhurst Hill, that's the one.
Being one of the first ones. We had, obviously, Mosin at Craft Beer Co. Well, that was a really...
That was the first proper one that I went to. So I'd... that I'd met you guys once at the factory, and then this one I was like, I'll pop along and meet these guys. And at that point, my girlfriend thought I was she thought I was like, you got to meet a bunch of strangers and talk about denim. I'm like, yeah. So she thought I was insane. And then I remember being actually quite nervous meeting everyone, because I was a bit like, oh god, it's a bit weird, like I don't really know these guys. It's a long time ago. So two funny things from that meet. David, do you remember this? We were standing around chatting. So I came and I met you guys. You could stood out like a sore thumb. Stand around chatting. At one point, some bloke walked in wearing double denim and he looked a little bit lost. And David like ran out. David was like, maybe he's here for the meet. Ran over to him all enthusiastic. And then started chatting to him. And this bloke was like, what are you talking about? And David was like, nope, he's not here for the meet.
Yep.
The very first one that I turned up to.
Was that your first one?
Yeah. So I think I saw the event through Mosin saying like, hey, you know, I'm like heading down to Craft Beer Co. To talk with these guys. And I was like, oh, Mosin, you know, I know him from Son of a Stag and, you know, helped stop Endrime and, you know, had chats with him and drinks and all sorts. And yeah, like I was like kind of walking down there and just see this like little Topo Designs bag bobbing away in the distance. I was like, oh, that's my sin call. And I ran up, hey, how's it going? And he was like, hey, do you know any other people at this event? I was like, no, not at all. But it's a really nice hang. And Mosin chatted about, you know, whatever Mosin chats about, and yeah, it's good.
Everything.
Stitch count. I remember Stitch count.
Yeah.
I remember this. He was talking about Stitch count on our various shirts, and the reasons behind it, and those kind of details.
I remember. So even more obscure detail was he I was showing him, because I was wearing jeans that I'd made, and I showed them to him. And apparently the way that I'd sewed the run and fell seam on the yoke was the women's wear way, which I didn't
remember that.
That was a thing. I was
like,
It's like it's like which panel overlaps the other panel is men's or women's. Yeah.
I still can't remember which way around it goes.
Sewing like a woman. Yeah.
I think on the women's it's supposed to like maybe be the overlapping, whereas the men's the bottom overlaps, but I'm not sure. Nice. Anyway. I'm just looking at my own butt. So
love it, Chip.
The other thing that I remember from that particular meet was at the very end, we went to get a photo taken with all of us, and I think David, you were taking it. And then everyone's like, no, David, get in it. There are some people. And there was a bloke and two women sitting at the bar, and you kind of like tapped him on the shoulder and you're like, do you mind taking a photo of us? And he was like, yeah, of course. He turned around, the two women turned around and saw all six of us there, head to toe in double denim. And they just cracked up laughing as we looked like the world's worst boy band.
Yeah. I remember too, we had like that picture out front of the Craft Beer Co. place, whatever, that was like, was it like maybe Andy in a type one? I think Lex, you might have had a type two, and I had a type three. Or I'm trying to remember who exactly was in the photo.
I think it was you, Ilya, and Andy, but I do vaguely remember. I think
I had the type. Did I have the type two? I can't remember which one I had at that time. It might have been, it could have been the PBJ jacket or the Shadow, the 316.
I forgot that there was a time when Ilya used to wear trucker jackets. Yeah. Man, time flies. We had Chris Hewitt as well. Remember that?
Yeah, that was at the same place, wasn't it?
Craft Beer Co. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Kind of seeing him talk about his made in UK denim.
Yeah, that was the early days. And I think he gave us all a piece of British denim at that time. And I guess is that what kind of sparked it for you, Tom?
Website prior to that, and I think I had like sent her a message being like, hey, yeah, I see you're like heading down to this, you know, it would be good to chat and, you know, just introduce myself. And yeah, it was the early days of, you know, United Overalls and, you know, seeing the fabric for the first time, you know, in the flesh, you know.
How long ago was it that it started, David, that this all started? I mean, it's been a long time, but was it 6-7 years ago? Five years ago?
I mean, I arrived in the country in 2013. So I'd probably say sometime around then, because like I found Rivet and Hyde probably like a year within moving to the UK because I wanted to buy some 316 jeans. So yeah, let's just say 2015 to keep it simple. So a good 7 years.
Yeah, 2015 sounds about right, I think.
Yeah, I remember one time we had Victor Selvage One come visit, who still probably lives in my hometown of Austin. So it's interesting to kind of share opinions of what Austin's like from two different folks. And of course, we had the sad moment when Kevin moved to Australia, abandoning the meetup. Shame on him.
What was the purpose of having the meetup, David? I know you kind of touched upon it, but
yeah, I mean, to be honest, basically, like, I had certain interests that I'd kind of developed both like living in San Francisco and then living in Paris. I think when I lived in SF, I lived near Self Edge, so I really got into raw denim. And the whole time I was in Paris, like, no one really understood it when I would like describe it to colleagues and stuff. So I was like, man, it'd be cool to like have some homies who are like into this stuff that like also like denim. And I also had, you know, kind of some ideas around like a brand or something. So I was like, yeah, even cooler if I could like meet people who are also like making stuff. And so I think in some ways, in the same way that people are like, I like CrossFit, I'm going to go join a CrossFit gym, or like, I like to play baseball, I'm going to go join a baseball team, I was like, I like to fade jeans. and that kind of is almost that simple, maybe. I needed friends.
No.
On that note, I think it might be fun to get everyone's opinion of what our hangouts are like, because I really struggle to explain to anyone who's not into raw denim, like, why this is cool and like why we do it. So
it's
interesting
cool
to kind of get your descriptions.
Very, very not cool.
I could paint quite an artistic picture of our meetings.
Go on, Tom.
So much like ancient Greece, there is wine and debauchery, flesh and the skin, flashing everywhere. No. I mean, usually a meat is.
I think you're describing your corner of the meat, Tom.
Oh, and then I woke up.
I think it's describing eyes wide shut.
Just close my eyes. And that's, no. Yeah, I mean, usually these events.
Flies wide shut. Sorry.
And my trousers are down.
I'll go on mute.
Usually these events take place in a public place. Whether that's two pub, a pub, or you know, somewhere that we can all meet in town, London, either kind of Shoreditch area, East, or you know, Soho Central, which there were a little bit more near Soho, so I can walk there. and yeah, it's just a bunch of us denim enthusiasts. A few people from the industry as well, like, you know, we've got friends like Kelly, who is a, what is she again?
Trend forecaster.
That's it. Trend forecaster. God, don't get me started. but yeah, people from the industry, from different brands, just us as general denim heads meeting up. We chat. Do you know what? Most of the time, not even that much about denim. You know, whenever my friends always ask me, oh, what do you do? It's like, well, we just drink a lot and talk about, you know, TV programs and, you know, often like what we do on this podcast, which is, you know, why we made the podcast, to bring that feel of Worn Out Global to people. So, yeah, it's a friendly affair. We're all approachable people, I feel like. Except for Lex.
Oi. At least I'm not a sex pest.
I see your judgmental looks.
The flannel's intimidating.
I mean, I don't know if you guys have any other views of it.
I think For me, it's the denim is just the commonality between us all. But it's definitely not the central topic that we discuss from meet to meet. It's maybe in the early meets, it was something that we would concentrate on a lot more. But I think you kind of get past that quite quickly. You just kind of build friendships with the people you meet, and just kind of want to know, you know, what they're up to, what they're getting on. It's like, you know, what they're doing with their lives and so forth. I think that's the more interesting part of the meet. Go on, Lex.
I was going to say, there's quite a lot of us as well. There's probably about maybe 10 to 15 regulars or semi-regulars, and then like another maybe 10 to 15 people that turn up occasionally. But also things like, it's worth pointing out, obviously, Darte, is it Darte or Dart London?
Dart.
Yeah, it started out of the meets.
Darte.
Has it not got an E on yet? Oh, well,
it's Darte. A Dart, yeah.
Dart.
Yeah, it's a shadow boxing.
That was obviously Mike and Ed met at the meets and then got on really well and then started a brand out of it. So actually, I've done work for Tom from the meets. I did done pattern cutting and sampling work for him. So
yeah, I think it's a great way of meeting different people and from different walks of life. But like I said, there's a commonality and interest in certain things that we're all into. It's also, I think, quite an open and welcoming community. We're definitely not a gatekeeping community. We're quite open to anyone to join and have a drink with us and chat with us. I think there's a lot of positives that have come from it. And also, I think we go to a few events which happen in the scene, like Clutch Cafe or American Classics, who host launches. I think it's always nice to be able to go to these places and know other people around, because it can be quite awkward if you're there on your own and you don't know anybody. So I think it is quite a nice way to go in a group and to have, you know, people to chat with and also go off and talk to other people who you get to know over time. I think there's been a lot of great things that have come from it.
Three quick shot things that come to mind was I remember the first time I was at one of the like Clutch events or something, I forgot what it was, and someone's like, "Oh, I listened to your podcast." And I was like, "Oh, wow." Sorry. And I was like so excited that like someone actually gave a shit about what we have to say.
You and found then, out one listener, what?
Yeah, I was like, "Oh my God, someone actually listened." And I remember another time quite recently we're at an event and the person that comes to mind is involved in the industry in a way. And like, "Why are you here?" I was like, "Oh, I do the Sons of Selvage podcast." And they're like, "Uh-huh." And just kind of like turned away. Like, they're like, "I don't give a shit what that is." I mean, they probably don't even know what it is, but I thought that was quite funny. Thing I want to mention is that my favorite thing about the podcast, or not the podcast, sorry, about the in-person hangouts is it's so funny how like someone will show up wearing something and like everyone has to pass it around and try it on. They're like, "Ooh, you got an XYZ shirt from ABC. I got it. What size is it? Let me try it on." They're like, "I'm probably a medium. I'm a large. I'm an extra small." And like just sort of the kind of weird sharing of the garments. It's almost like a ritual in some ways of the meetups, you know, the trying of the garment.
Yeah, especially like when we had like the guy from Labor Union come down. It's like everyone had to try the jacket and see what the size was like for Labor Union. You just have to, you know, it's I think tradition there.
Yeah, we need to formalize this kind of like Festivus and like the different events for that.
And Lex bringing his big, you know, big jeans
Drawing jeans, yeah.
Oversized jeans, yeah.
Show and tell.
Yeah, me getting in them.
That picture is still one of the funniest pictures ever. I need to repost it on the internet.
Yeah,
at the moment,
if you want to warn out Glover, then there's usually some kind of antics that happen.
I think the one with the giant jeans, someone brought a bottle of whiskey along, which is where the antics started at that particular one.
That was me. I'm responsible for that. Yeah.
Getting me drunk. Not that you try.
David, what's your biggest surprise that has come out of the hang? Like, you know, you initially started with the goal of, you know, meeting people who are into the same kind of thing. And yeah, kind of what do you think has led from it in something you'd never have suspected, I guess?
I think it's not so much like an offshoot or anything like that, but for me, the most impressive thing is just the persistence of it, which in some ways is largely due to yourself, Ilya, organizing, you know, the London get togethers during the pandemic, alongside, I think, us also kind of like getting this podcast.
Let's keep on. He can always edit later. Oh, yeah.
I've just restarted the recording. Okay. Now, so.
Yeah. Let's wait for David to.
This is the Sons of Selvage podcast.
The takeover.
Right. Now David's not. Let's insult him. God, what a long neck freak.
We don't even like neon.
We like Henleys and hate neon.
Yeah. Suck on that, David. What happened to him? And what happens to this recording? I don't know where it goes in my files. Oh. That's a video. What's going on? Oh, he's just sent the previous.
Logging back in.
What's going on?
Maybe have to come out
on
this one.
Surely he would just jump on this one because he said it's the same link every week.
Okay.
He'll just
connect with the call. I'm gonna go grab a beer. So.
Okay. Shall I do like a little dance or something?
I think you should do a dance whilst. Dave's gonna have fun editing this one. Our usual level of professionalism here.
Can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, we can hear.
All right, I've just restarted it. although it's okay. So we are recording again. And I've just learned the hard way that if you plug your laptop into a USB-C hub, as opposed to directly into the wall, eventually your laptop will run out of battery and die, even though it's got a continual source of electricity. Cool. So sorry about that.
That's okay. Have we got the original recording?
Yeah, like Skype does it all in the cloud, so I'll be able to download it.
You'll just have to just merge them together.
Yeah, it'll be an easy fix in iMovie.
But I recorded a little outtakes one that you can add to you.
some bloopers. Yeah, so I think we stopped when I asked you about what has been the kind of the biggest, surprises coming out of it. And so I don't know whether you want to pick up from there.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I think it's the persistence of the community. So through the combination of yourself, Ilya, organizing the in-person meetups all throughout the pandemic and even so forth, alongside, I guess, like us starting to do this podcast right before the pandemic, we've kind of been able to kind of keep this thing going, even though in theory, it could have easily died a quick death. That's a bad pun or bad metaphor. it could have stopped running during that time. So I think that's to me the biggest thing, just the fact that like it's still going and the podcast is still going and the community is still growing and our WhatsApp and Discords as well. What about you, Ilya? What do you think?
Yeah, I guess I would agree as definitely as the main point. And hopefully you guys don't mind me pestering you every month to, it's time to check in and, it's time for that meet. It's just meeting various people and just enjoying the variety of people that we meet as well, from from the different backgrounds and from different skill sets and their different passions. Yeah, that for me is always inspiring to come upon somebody who's into this or that. When we met Matt of Sierra and South, someone like that, who's doing something really incredible in the UK. It's nice to support that, but also to learn of what goes into his craft. I think the people that we've met is probably been the biggest surprise for me. I'm really grateful to the group for that, and I think that's why I'm still persisting on organizing these kind of things, is because the potential of meeting interesting people is very high.
Later this year, what's the anniversary of? The 150th birthday of Jeans is May the 20th. So we should have a big meet for that.
That might be when's May 20th? What day is that? I'm celebrating my birthday. Whoop.
You'll be sharing your birthday with Jeans itself.
Yes, 19th or 20th. So, if people want to meet to celebrate Jeans and me, because I feel like, they're equally as important, because it'll be my 30th birthday.
So. Are you by any chance Jeans-us?
Jeans-us.
I don't like to brag, but I do occasionally call myself Jeans-us.
we can call it the official Tom's 120 years late party.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 30 plus 120.
Yeah, got it.
What do they consider the first pair of jeans?
This is when Jacob Davis submitted the patent for Riveter jeans.
It's that one.
Okay. Yeah, which is kind of considered, obviously they existed beforehand, and then the 501 was in 1890, I believe, so 17 years later, because that's when US patent law was. And actually, I noticed Levi's are advertising 150 years of the 501, which I'm pretty sure isn't true, so they don't even know their own stuff.
No, do you know what? I feel like they celebrate some kind of like milestone every year. It's like 120 years since blah blah blah. It was something last year. Like, what? You're celebrating like every year some kind of milestone. I'm sure it doesn't work like that.
I was going to say I could get on a soapbox and complain about it, but then I realized if you stack up all those silly little wooden boxes they do for each of these releases, you could just stand on that set instead and complain about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably should have saved that one. Oh well.
Should we highlight, because obviously we've got our little kind of like meetup group, but there's quite a few other ones like in the UK and around the world. Is there any that have you guys ever been to any other ones? So there's obviously UK Denim Hangs, which I know a couple of you have been to, which is a more kind of so our meet is kind of London based, but this is a more kind of UK based one. So they meet normally in somewhere in central England, so more people can reach it. Have you guys been to any other meets?
David and I went to two. David and I went to the one in Manchester, which was organised by Amanda and by Ben of Club Acom at the time.
And don't forget Andy Metzger.
And Andy was there as well. And then I've also attended the first UK Denim Hang, which was in Sheffield at Ben's Club Acom shop. So at the time, Ben was organising the UK Denim Hangs, which then went on to become a virtual hang. And also one of the chaps is organizing these now in Sheffield, which I forgot his Instagram account.
Is it Yorkshire Denim or?
That's the one. That's the one, yes. So that's being carried on. otherwise. I know the European guys have at some point had some hangs, and that started off from denim days in Amsterdam.
That's like the German guys, right? Like in Munich or
Berlin. Well, German and Dutch guys. So that was going on there. Which then, yeah, the German guys kind of adopted and were creating the hangs around their way. I'm just trying to think who else. I know Sweden had one at some point. A couple, because there's quite a few, you know, Swedish denim heads.
They like meet up in an IKEA.
That's so racist, David.
Well, no, it's not. There's nothing to do with race in IKEA. It's simply an enterprise that happens to be Swedish.
I'm joking.
We can meet at a Greg's.
I'd be up for that.
Especially the Jesus sausage rolls.
I've never had a Greg's.
What? Hold on.
I have not either.
Well, hold on. I'm not understanding these sentences. What do you mean you've never had a Greggs?
Never had a Greggs, no.
You mean you've never had... I guess it implies a sausage roll, right?
Why have you never had it? How have you never had a Greggs?
Pret's always next door.
How do you... Oh, God, Pret's awful compared to Greggs.
Yeah, it's like Greggs could be like half the price. Like, save some money.
I'm just trying to get my head around this. So you've never had a Greggs?
No, explain the appeal of Greggs.
It's cheap.
Greggs is cheap. It's hot, ready to go, and tastes decent.
Yeah.
They do a good meal as well.
And every time you have a vegan sausage roll, it makes Piers Morgan angry, so.
Yeah. It, like, every vegan sausage roll takes away one boner from Piers Morgan.
All right, I've got an idea.
Sorry, David, just a quick question. Is it something that you would have for breakfast or for lunch or either?
Either, yeah. Sausage and bean bake, breakfast. Sausage roll, lunch.
Brunch?
Brunch, yeah, brunch. Brunch, if you want to that fancy. Any time of day. If you buy it and take it home with you, dinner.
I just had an idea. So the Greggs campaign where they had the Christmas manger and like they had the sausage roll in place of baby Jesus in the manger. I think for the Tom's 120 years late party, we should buy some Whitesville's teas. We should wash them so they're a bit dirty and kind of stained. We should get them screen printed with the Greg's sausage roll in the manger and have Tom's face like superimposed on the end of the sausage roll. And like that will be our denim hang shirt.
There you go.
Didn't they have a collaboration recently with someone?
They
had a load of Greg stuff. I think I was in the departments. I was in Marks and Spencer. No, not Mark. Can't be Marks and Spencer. I was in Primark.
Was it Primark? It was Primark.
Yeah, Primark.
Yeah.
I had to buy. My dad was in hospital. I had to buy him a dressing gown. So I went, popped into a Primark. I wouldn't normally go in there. And they had all the Greg stuff. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Maybe we should wear that to the next meet. Turn up head to toe in Greg's merchandise.
That sounds like the collaboration of my nightmares.
Literally.
Yeah, I feel like there's a conflict of interest in that it sounds awesome, but as you know, champions of rugged, long-lasting quality goods, I'm not sure it's acceptable for us to do that.
Oh no!
I mean, I guess
ethically.
Oh yeah, no, I would actually buy it. Like it's tat, but.
I mean, normally if you're gonna do something horrible, you would like go and plant a tree to like offset your horribleness. Maybe we can like go plant some indigo seeds and kind of film that and put on Instagram to kind of make us feel better about buying shit clothing.
Or adopt an orphan, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's any kind of saving that. I think it's better just to have inaction. In this case. Okay, so maybe, but Greg's is something that we'll have to come back to at some point.
We'll bring you a vegan sausage roll to the next meet, Ilya.
I don't mind eating meat ones. It's fine. But if you recommend the vegan ones specifically,
The meat ones and the vegan ones taste exactly the same. There's so little.
Okay.
That's the point, right?
Yeah.
Random factoid, I learned in Ireland they've actually classified Subway sandwiches as dessert because the sugar count is so high in the bread that they actually can't call it like a nutritional meal anymore.
That is mad, but I mean, fair point.
Greg's is like the closest thing I could think of to Greg's in America would be maybe like something like Subway.
Greg's and Subway are very different.
I know, but it's still the closest thing I can think of.
For me, like having never eaten at Greg's, it's something like I'd imagine I would get from a school dinner or a school lunch, sorry.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Okay.
Closest thing is American school cafeteria.
Yeah. That's probably sounds about right.
Yeah, not American school lunch, David. A very English, probably not what kids get these days. Because listening to what my son eats at school, it's very different than what I had.
Basically, school dinners from the early 90s.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I would have been mid 90s in primary school, and it's not my fondest memories of food, but yeah.
It's interesting because in our meetup, it's kind of tied back to the meetups, I guess. We always end up somewhere with burgers and fries, so in some ways, it's almost like the grown-up version of school lunches, where you sit in the cafeteria around your friends at all like Dungeons and Dragons or all like to play soccer, aka football, and you find your clique and you hang with them and you eat your burger and fries in school. We're kind of doing the grown-up version of that, especially last week or the week before when we were at Beer and Burger at King's Cross, and we're like sitting on these like long benches eating our burgers and fries and drinking beer and like trying on each other's clothes and stuff. It's very much like a bunch of high school gang has like grown up and are doing the same exact thing as an adult, just the adult analog.
We're not very sophisticated, are we?
No.
No fine dining.
World's worst gang.
Clothing's not that sophisticated either, right?
See, all the sartorial guys go to fine dinners and smoke cigars, and we're just eating burgers and trying each other's clothes on.
Maybe we should do that next time, then go to a tasting menu somewhere.
They just have their pommes frites instead of their fries, and then their burgers have a slice of foie gras on top.
Well, I haven't actually, having worked at Black Horse Lane for over a year now, I haven't gone to Slow Burn, which is the pop-up restaurant in the factory at the moment. So maybe a good idea would be to book a dinner. Yeah, and have a nice meal in a denim factory.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
That would be amazing, especially because the factories, I guess, changed so much over the years. It apparently wouldn't be recognizable compared to where it was.
I think it'd be very different to what a lot of you guys would remember, apart from Tom, who's visited quite recently. I think that could be a nice evening. That we should organize.
Man, I'm impressed. We're getting like stitched down podcast level of organization here. They've got their like, let's put you on a bus and take you to like the Alden factory or something, or like they did a trip to Division Roads Dude Ranch. Well, we're gonna do our global denim hang to celebrate Tom's birthday and Gene anniversary in Gene Factory with dinner. Event.
Yeah, we'll take you on the tube to Walthamstow.
there is a whole bunch of breweries nearby, so it could also be like
there are brewery crawl. There's one of the new ones which have opened up recently, Signature Brew. That's a really good one. It's just opposite the factory now. So you've got. Do you remember what's Truman Brewery there when you were working? So now you've got Truman Brewery, which is a big hall, massive, just opposite, and then just around the corner you've got Signature Brew. So both are really excellent places to grab drinks, grab food. So yeah, we could you know, post dinner, grab some beers there as well. So I think that sounds like a, it's not the most easiest for you know, places to go, especially if you're out of town like some of us are, but otherwise I think it'd be a good venue to go to.
I would say au contraire, because the Victoria line is the fastest line in the whole system, and you're like one stop from Tottenham Hale, even walkable distance from Tottenham Hale.
Okay.
Or 15 minutes from King's Cross. So
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe I'm biased, but doesn't get much more well connected than that.
Yeah, I'm good for it. So yeah, I think we can put that down as one of the next ones we could do.
Going back to the I guess the meetups, David, as the person who started it, would you have any advice to anyone who's either thinking about starting up their own group or kind of trying to find out if there is a local group and join them? What would your advice be?
Yeah, if you're starting your own, cast your net wide, because people aren't going to find out about it right away, and probably don't waste your money setting up a meetup on meetup.com, because you have to pay for that. So make an Instagram, post on the Reddit Raw Denim, post on Super Future, and just like basically try and find any friends in your local area who are also into denim. Usually you can kind of somehow find someone in the scene that lives where you are and connect, like Kevin and I did. Also, it takes a long time. We've been building this thing for, gosh, let's say 7 years. I think it probably took really 3 to 4 to like really kind of get going proper. For a long time, it's just a couple of us that would always meet up. And yeah, stick with it and connect with anyone you can find in your community. And over time, you get somewhere.
I think what also helped, David, just to add on to your point, is, you know, I think in the early days, a great thing was having guests come and, you know, be part of the meet. I think that helped to draw people into a, I guess, a situation where they might not feel comfortable being initially. Like, I think, Lex, you said it was a little bit weird the first time going to meet people to talk about denim. So yeah, if there's a draw to, you know, to go and see someone or to do something like that in your town, I think that is quite helpful.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually, because if you can get a local brand to host you, and like maybe, you know, you say literally could just show up and like stand out front of your building, that alone will go a long way. Like, you know, if I was in LA, I'd be hitting up Railcar or you know, RGT or 316 and saying like, can I literally like just like stand out front of your building with a whole bunch of dudes that might buy shit from you after they get drunk, and we sort of like have a cool place to hang out. Like that alone, I think, goes a long way to make it enticing, because you're not just sort of like meeting at a Greg's or like a McDonald's, but rather at a cool venue where there's something interesting to folks who are into denim.
And actually, pretty much everyone who's came to the meets has been really nice. You know, we've been doing it for 7 years, and everyone has gotten really well. And as I said, all good friends now.
I can only think of like one bit of drama, which I won't go into, because you know, no need to go into that on video. But yeah, it's been pretty cool, and I think generally speaking, positive all around. Awesome. And I guess maybe I know you might want to wrap up soon, but just, yeah, huge thank you again, Ilya, for keeping the in-person events going during the pandemic and so forth. It's been awesome. And then thank you guys for being a part of this podcast, which is basically the virtual hangout.
Well, thanks for starting it, David.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And thanks for everyone who listens, too, because you're kind of like virtual homies that.
The one person you met at that event?
No, we've
confirmed listener.
We've got a few folks. I mean, we're not huge. But we're getting there. And
is the listenership bigger than the number of hosts?
Yes, it is. That's how we also, like, you know, we've got a YouTube now, so like that's kind of helping us get a bit more discoverable, putting them hashtags in so that we get indexed.
Cool. Yeah.
And yeah, we got that Discord server that we're slowly building. Cool. We're on to something. It's just going to take a while.
If you build on it, that,
On that note, after all that talk of Greg's, I need to go and eat some food. So,
all right. Well, maybe this is a good place to wrap it up then. So let me move over so I can get my text. My laptop's alive again. So thanks, everybody, for listening to our latest episode. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, please follow us on Instagram at Sons of Salvage Podcast. And lastly, message us on Instagram with any questions you'd like us to discuss in a future episode, or reach out if you want to jump on our Discord server. And on that note, that's a wrap.